Private Jackson had a girl he fondly called Bo Peep. Now Jackson didn't have a car, so drove by in a Jeep. They took a ride, the time flew by, and Bo Peep was in heaven. Till Jackson cried, Bo Peep, his Jeep's gotta be in camp by 11. So little Bo Peep has lost her Jeep and don't know where to find it. Her soldier boy took it back to camp and left Bo Peep behind it. It didn't have doors, the seats were hard, but Bo Peep never minded. It didn't ride like a Cadillac, she wondered who designed it. Roller coasters nearly killed her, aeroplanes, they never thrilled her. But with Jackson at the wheel, she got that Jeep, Jeep, Jeep appeal. Now little Bo Peep wants to find her Jeep and find her soldier chappy. If he comes chug chuggy in his old bits buggy, Bo Peep will be happy. Now little Bo Peep has lost her Jeep, her boyfriend made an error. He let her drive, goodness sakes alive, that Bo Peep, she's a terror. With throttle pushed down, she tore through town, the red lights didn't stop her. The soldier knew that they both were through when she sideswiped a copper. Little Bo Peep has lost her Jeep, oh my, why must her joy end? Now her little Jeep is laying in a heap, and the guardhouse has her boyfriend.
Hi, I'm Brian from Olathe, Kansas, and you're listening to WGXC Akron 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Healthcare Consortium, a rural health network dedicated to improving access to health care and supporting the health and well-being of the people in our rural community. Throughout 2018, the Healthcare Consortium will be celebrating 20 years of serving the residents of Columbia and Greene counties. To learn more about the Healthcare Consortium and its services, please visit www.columbiahealthnet.org or call 518-822-8820.
Hi there, this is the Art of the Hudson Valley on WGXC 90.7 FM in Acre, Catskill, Hudson. This is listener-supported radio for the open ears. And I'm your host, Chad Weckler, for the next hour. We have two lovely guests in the studio, Charlotta Jansen.
Hi.
And Shannon Greer.
How do you do, Chad?
I'm good, guys. Thanks for coming in. Two wonderful Hudson Valley artists, although I hear Brooklyn often from the both of you.
Yes. Slashies.
Are you like back and forth?
Yeah, we're back and forth. I think we're probably like 4 days here, 3 days in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Charlotta has a restaurant in Bed-Stuy that we have to go down and visit every once in a while.
Yes.
I must say, from my point of view, watching you on social media from that restaurant,
yes,
and your home and your other, you know, we're going to talk about your art salon here in Hudson. You guys love to make things.
I don't sleep.
I wouldn't think so.
There's no time for sleep.
But you sleep
when we're dead.
You're very creative in all aspects, from architecture to artwork to photography.
Well, sometimes you get thrown into it. Life throws you curveballs. We've been freelancers all our lives. I thought one day I'll grow up and I'll have a regular job, but that day never came. And so you just roll with the punches and then things happen.
And then it's also amazing how our design senses have changed. You know, I think about Shea Oscar, Charlotta's restaurant, when it was in Fort Greene, and we came up here and designed the Hudson Milliner, our guest house up here, and a lot of the decisions we made here helped inform her new restaurant.
Stole design ideas is what he's saying.
Yes. And just really made the new Shea Oscar in Bed-Stuy just incredibly beautiful, but with a lot of hints of the Hudson Milliner.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love your eclecticness, which makes it unique. And Shannon, of course, is very good as a photographer to represent that for the our listeners to see.
Yeah, we kind of think, is it kooky or is it practical? And often we go for the cookie.
What's the cuisine at the restaurant?
It's French. It's a French bistro. And I've been working with a chef since 1999 and the manager since 2002. So it's basically, we're family. We're like a international family, and we love each other. And I hope that shows in everything we do.
And just around the corner from here at the Hudson Studio is your Hudson Milliner Art Salon.
Yes, Art Salon.
And Charlotte, we were speaking before we came on the air. What inspired you to create this?
Well, we always talked about wanting to have an art garage. Like one day we'll have a garage and we'll just do shows there. We'll have parties there. We'll have social gatherings. We'll do storytelling. Just the things, you know, that it's an open space that doesn't dictate but invites in. And so the idea of an art salon is that it's a collaborative, that you can find collaborations in different ways, that you don't try to set it, like, try to control it, but that you just try to invite it in. And you want to say something, Sean?
Oh, yeah. No, I was imagined in Brooklyn, in Fort Greene, because they have all these garages and warehouses near us in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And I would always say to Charlotte, we really need to have to get a garage. It would be so amazing to have this open space in front and have our studios in back and, you know, be able to have the front populated with our artwork. Mm. And then we had a tenant here, Chris Larica, for 7 years. He was amazing woodworker. And he decided to keep his furniture in one place where he lives. And
to give up the store that he had
here. And he gave up the store that he had here.
Wow.
And,
we were very sad.
And we were sad to see him go. But then we didn't have a new tenant. And I said to Charlotte, let's put your artwork up on the walls and we'll see what happens.
And let's organize a show.
And we'll organize a show and
see how we like it.
Yes.
It's like Mickey and Judy over here.
So it's funny because at one point Charlotte looked at it and she was like, this is the garage that you were thinking of. Mm. It just happens to be in a beautiful gallery with beautiful tin ceilings in Hudson, New York.
Yeah.
And a main drag. Yeah.
And right now, Charlotte, you have a show called Americana.
Yeah, celebrating our checkered past and present. Yes.
I you know, correct me if I'm wrong. I would characterize Shannon as being more whimsical in his art, and Charlotte, you're more serious. Would that be...
Maybe a little angrier, too.
Goes with politics and social events, I think.
And you're not outraged about the politics and social events?
Well, we could talk about that. You paint about it.
Exactly. So that makes it for a more productive...
But I think that your artwork and a lot of your paintings came from a celebration and not out of anger.
Yeah, I'm not angry per se, but I think what we do, like I'm an immigrant from Germany. I'm German-American. And I love Americana, but I also love that in my culture we process the burden of our past through art. And I think that that's something that really can help us with our narrative now, with the story that's going on, because we say, oh, you know, this is a problem, let's cut it away, it's a cancer, let's throw it away, you know, rather than, hey, let's process it. Because, for instance, in Germany, we give 20% of our art funding to processing specifically the burden of our past. That is the job that art has. And how about we reflect on it so that we think about it and understand it rather than, oh, let's just not talk about it. This way it'll go away. That doesn't work, you know. And I've done shows, you know, all over the States, especially when I did a series of Freedom Riders. I was just possessed with painting them because I just loved this narrative. You know, these people, these young people who just got on a bus, who staged civil disobedience in the most beautiful way. And then when you meet them, you just fall in love with them more. So the more I met Freedom Riders, the more I had to paint about it. They would share a letter from their mother that they got in jail, and it would just move you to tears. And I just thought, like, why aren't we making art about this, you know? And we'd be at an opening, and there would just be tears, you know? And it was wonderful. It was so cathartic, and it was so important. And I thought, like, why am I doing this show? I mean, I can't explain it. People go, like, wait a minute. Does this have anything to do? I said, well, you know, I think we, you know, learning from a horrid past growing up with a horrible, horrible past from like starting two world wars with a tiny country.
Yeah.
I think you learn to process this burden. You know, you learn that this is something you can draw from and bring it to light, and bring it to light in a way that can help alleviate the pain that it still is causing.
And I was reading your bio on the Art Salon website, and you're from Maine. Your parents are from Germany.
Germany and Sweden, yeah.
And when you moved overseas...
To Iran.
To Iran.
Yeah.
I would say, was that sort of the beginning of your experience of change, social upheaval?
Yeah, but I think also my parents were very open and always discussed politics with us, always discussed how economics were. Like, my favorite line from my dad was, "This week, no pocket money, and I love you," you know? And so I really found that we had very lively political discussions. And, yeah, I think Iran was a big influence because you just see how this whole thing was a slow-motion crumbling of a society. And every week something fell away, and then one day to the other, the bank just closed. And one day to the other, there was a tank in front of your house. And one day to the other, the demonstrations would get louder and louder because they had a curfew on the street. You'd have it on your rooftops, and all you'd hear would be this stamping of feet on your rooftops.
Mm.
And then the commander would ask for us to make him tea so that if he's not there, he doesn't have to, you know, take action. So if he was away and they were demonstrating, that would be okay. And so we would go like, we are not hearing anything. Meanwhile, they're stamping and screaming and saying, you know, all kinds of slogans. And then eventually, you know, they start playing shootings or the sound of shots on a recorder, and the people scatter. Mm. And then eventually they start shooting in the air, and then eventually someone gets really hurt. And people got killed. So you see this slow movement, and you realize, wait a minute, you know, I have to do something. I can't just watch. You can't be a bystander in these things.
I love your father's comment, because I find that I've heard that in a common way from usually people who don't have very much.
Yeah.
Can barely pay the rent, or people went through the Depression, and certainly when you watch, I like to watch BBC News, World News, and when they do stories from Afghanistan and Venezuela and Syria, you see these people who have nothing, but you see this collective love and support.
Yeah.
And it keeps them together and persevere.
Yeah, it was interesting because, you know, we experienced the day when the bank closed and nobody had money. Nobody. Like, we didn't, nobody else did, you know. And eventually my grandmother actually had to send us money so that we could make it out, because we weren't even going to school anymore. Nothing was happening anymore. Nobody was paying my father because he had a small company and his clients weren't paying. So we had to leave that way, you know. But one of my favorite things was also, it's kind of weird, but I think for kids, these things are real adventures, you know. And I know how, you know, a lot of people want to shield their kids from bad experiences and stuff like that, but I realize these things also build you. And for instance, we'd get often calls that were threatening, that were saying like, oh, we're going to kill you, you're going to be dead, you're going to die, you know. And so my parents thought, you know, if grown-ups pick that up, then they'd have to like maybe spring to action. But if kids just answer and go like, hi, oh, you want to kill, oh great, when you want to come, you want tea, or, you know, how do you want to kill us? You know, you just ask ridiculous questions, you know. That's what my mother said, just ask ridiculous questions. And I realized, wow, this is really a great, you know, guidebook to, like, rather than catering to the fear, just going like, you know, ridiculing it, you know.
Well, Charlotta, when did you get your first seed planted for art?
Art. Oh, okay. Sorry, it's getting... Okay, so...
We're on a Charlotta roll.
Yeah. I love her stories.
Yeah. Well, I always loved sketching, and my mother saw that pretty early on, and my parents are great encouragers of crazy things. So she actually sent me to an old artist, and he was in his 80s. His name was Fred. And they were old friends of my parents, and my mother couldn't afford to get me like something swanky, so she asked these old friends if they'd teach me a little bit. And they were both arrived artists. Her name was actually Charlotta, his wife, and I'd been named after her.
Uh-huh.
And she went by Lilo, And so when I was 11 or 12, she sent me to them to spend, you know, some time there and learn from him. And he said, I'll teach you to see and you teach yourself the rest. You know, and if you can see it, you can paint it. You know, and I love that whole thing. He would tell me, you know, we have so much in our memory, you know, if and it's two steps. So basically he would take me and give me an object to look at, and then he'd take it away and make me draw it.
Great.
And he'd do it again and again and again, and then he would arrange, you know, something like a few objects together. And then he said, you know, look at this, and then he took me out the room and made me draw it.
Hmm.
He said it's two steps, seeing and paint and expressing, painting or drawing. And he also told me to copy work that I really liked, you know, find out what it was that I liked about it. And he also had a, they were also great processors of pain, I must say, because they were a husband and wife. They met during the Second World War. They were art teachers, so what are they going to do? You know, they had a motorcycle. They traveled around Germany, and they couldn't have kids, so they had this very ironic comic strip where they had two sons and a daughter. Didn't exist, but this was a narrative, and I remembered as a kid that I was looking at solid gold. You know, I could see this is gold. What they, you know, their art is, yeah, you know, they were artists. It was what you expected, but this was their gold. And I always will miss that I didn't never find these comic strips again, because it was Max Moritz and Marie. So Max and Moritz were brothers, and their sister Marie, she'd always get carried off by the Russian army or by Russian soldiers. And Max Moritz would have to free her.
Mm.
And they do all kinds of ridiculous things. They come into ridiculous situations, absolutely crazy.
And I love that.
And then Marie would get stolen again.
So if anybody does find these, we're going to have a show about it.
Yeah.
Shannon, do you think your start in art mirrors what Charlotta went through? I mean, how did you learn to see and to express yourself?
You know, I think it, for me, it just all came out of childhood and just being interested in arts right away. And it seemed something I always was doing as a child, drawing and painting. And for some children, it never stops. And for some children, some of the greatest artists I've ever seen are children. And unfortunately, some of them either aren't nurtured or they find sports or whatever it is, and they get away from it. But some people don't, and they stay in it. And you know, I love creating, and whether it's creating through photography or creating through the Hudson Milliner, designing these spaces or the art salon, it's just been wonderful. But it's just been a lifelong thing for me. You know, ever since I could hold a pen or a pencil.
Yeah, how do you keep that? I mean, if you start with a potential nurturing from maybe a mentor or a family member, how do you keep that energy going? Because, you know, once it leaves, then it's up to you to nurture yourself.
I feel like it's more something that's been, like, let loose, and then you can't stop it.
Mm.
Like, you cannot not... I cannot not paint, and Shannon cannot not take pictures. We feel
he's got his camera right here in the studio.
I've already been taking some photographs that I'm looking forward to downloading.
So I think it's all about, like, you really have to set up time for yourself and not say, oh, I can't paint today or I can't work today. You have to go, like, okay, I need to progress today. I need to give myself that space to make myself happy.
And you're not a neat painter, from what I the images that I see. You just get yourself right into it.
It's the painting girl.
Gave me away.
At some point, I want to have a show just of her painting clothes and hang them up on the wall.
I go, like, they're not. That's not art. I work hard on these pieces. What are you talking about?
But you know, it's really fun for me as a photographer right now, especially with Instagram and having her restaurant, her art Instagram page, mine, the Hudson Milliner. I literally get to photograph all the time for these, and it actually is a lot of fun, and it has me picking up the camera every day and, mm-hmm. and thinking about photographs and it's been amazing. And it's and thinking of in different ways because there are different things that I'm needing to, you know, put up on Instagram.
I was watching on the BBC World News a celebration of a British photojournalist who's in his 80s, but he's having a show. And he started, I think, in the Vietnam War, and all of his images are black and white. And the reporter asked him about why do you do black and white, and primarily, what do you think about people not doing traditional photography, but using phones and using social media? And you'd think he'd say, well, rah, rah, rah. But he was, if people can get interested and expressing themselves and using photography, that's a win-win situation.
Well, the funniest thing about Instagram is I could take what I consider the best picture I've ever taken in my life, and a few people might respond to it. But if you take a selfie, everybody responds to it. So the trick or the hardest part is not to try to get the things with the most like, but to keep on producing images that you like and that, you know,
but working on a strong narrative, yeah. Bringing it back to that, you know, because your narrative is what you what will linger.
Yeah, well, and Charlotta, we were sort of beginning a conversation about a body of work, and I my experiences are, I mean, for a photographer it's great, or even a painter, to just do one image, but when you can do a collective of similar theme, then you create a story, and I think that's something that you enjoy doing.
Yeah, I never make an orphan painting. They always have to have brothers and sisters and cousins and that you know, feed off each other. And it also helps because, you know, I like to rotate them. So if I get too like knotted into one, then I move it on, you know. Then I just move it to the side and take the other one up, where I just have a long ledge on which I prop them all up, and then I just move from one piece to the other. Yeah.
Well, the family members change positions, and then the family
They do. Some come along real strong, and some just take a little bit of time and, you know, play hard to get.
Well, what's also amazing, I think, with Charlotta working in series, not only in series of different paintings of which he collages and works over with rust and other things, but she's also working in prints where she can collage them and do a series of the same print, but each one is unique, which is really,
yeah, that's really fun. Yeah,
I should remind our listeners, you're listening to WGXE 90.7 FM, and we have two lovely guests, Charlotta Jansen and Shannon Greer. Here, two artists who were basically having a conversation about art, but they have a milliner art salon here, Hudson Milliner Art Salon here in Hudson, and we're continuing that conversation of art and the art salon and art process. And,
yes.
And Charlotta, the work that's now in the gallery, Americana, could you talk about that?
Yeah, well, it's a range from different shows, but I realize the main theme that goes through is the Americana. Mm. You know, when I came here and the artwork that I looked at, you know, a lot of the photography from the WPA, I just really loved how the mundane was so beautiful. You know, it was not like about a royal princess or a royal prince. It was it was just an everyday event that was portrayed, and it was beautiful. And there's this amazing amount of great void in it, which I love. Mm. I love it because, you know, in Germany we have this expression that everything has to be pregnant with meaning. And why? Mm. You know, you can also paint in the void and give the observer space to reflect. And sometimes it's all it's about. To me, art is just about slowing you down. You know, because everything's getting faster and faster and faster. We can be almost anywhere on planet Earth very quickly. We can make decisions quickly. We can bank. We can, you know, do everything from our desktop. Mm. I mean, we're moving in such amazing p- pace, all of these tasks would have taken us so much longer. And sometimes we also get really depressed about things getting so fast. You know, you have this space to think, and you should be go like, "Wow, I've got free time," and all you do is, you know, get yourself down and let your demons out. But to me, like, art is about slowing down, you know, and reflecting on that, and reflecting on the incredible pace we're at now, at this time, and that that we need to slow down to actually catch up.
But that speeding up of being everywhere is also a great vehicle for getting your work.
Absolutely,
seen.
I'm not saying that has to stop. I'm just saying that, you know, spiritually and mentally, if we look back, we can actually catch up. We can see, like, what we've, you know, that in that free time that we have, that we can reflect on how we got here and what we can change, you know, because I'm talking about celebrating our checkered past and present. It's checkered present and it's a checkered past. And if we just cut it away like a cancer and say, "Oh, it didn't happen," or, you know, "Yeah, that's in the past. You know, it's, we're in a post-racial society." No, we're not. You know, we are, it's all happening now, and we have not reflected enough upon that. And people who had made great strides and tried really hard to create a better union have been demonized and have and their lives made hard. The series of Freedom Riders that I did about 100 portraits of them, and I especially made sure to collage in articles and also indictments of the time to see the rhetoric, the language that was used, because now we can say afterwards, "Wow, these are heroes," you know, because they confronted this. But what were they confronting, and what was the language at the time used, and how were they put down, and how they may have, like, sat alone in a cell and thought, like, "Am I doing the right thing? Is this really what I should be doing?" You know, I just try to bring us back to that moment where, you know, you question yourself, and maybe this will inspire others to do something now.
Because history repeats itself.
I think it, as they say, it rhymes. It doesn't necessarily repeat, but there it revisits. You know, I feel like if you don't learn the lesson, it revisits the lesson until you learn it as a society and as an individual. I know that's in my life. Like, if I didn't learn a lesson, it repeated itself. The lesson repeats itself. I think the narrative changes, but the lesson keeps on repeating itself if you don't work on it. You know.
Yeah, certainly the present, we're getting, sometimes the past creeps up and can influence a present moment. And sometimes it's forgotten for the storyteller to edit it out or bring it into the story. It's very powerful, that, I think, potential narrative where you can keep things silent or you can share.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to keep things silent.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
That's being complicit.
That's good, Shannon. I like that. Would you say most of your work, Charlotta, is more past than present, or is it always a collision?
It's a collision. I think that's a good word, and I'm going to use that. Thank you. You just gave me the word, because I like them colliding. You know, an art show is not necessarily like a history show. You know, for instance, when I did you know, the Freedom Riders, and they were showing in Nashville, Tennessee, there was a man, and I love this man. He's a curmudgeon, and he was a Freedom Rider, and he walked in, and I know that he's an activist in his community. And he said, you know, something. I said, "You know, I'm sorry I didn't paint you in." And he said, "That's all right. I'm offended by your work." And I said, "You know, I expected that from you." He said, "Really?" I said, "And we're going to discuss this." You know, and he at some point said, you know, that I paint, you know, as you know, my portraits are, people are very blue, green.
Mm-hmm.
It's disputable whether they're bluish or greenish. And he said, "Well, that's not accurate." And I said, "It's an art show. It's not a history show. It's an interpretation." Yeah. "You recognized everyone?" And he said, yes, I recognized everyone." I said, "That's the main thing." Then I made my portrait made it to the other side, reached you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's, you know, the decision, you know, from an artist's point of view, because in photography, we can do that too. We can take a color photograph and change the colors or put it black and white. And a painter can choose to do the same thing.
Yeah.
That's our point of view.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's not so much whether it's the past or the present. I think what the process is, what I like to do is and I'll swing this now in this direction, is basically when I paint something, I want to really strip every bit of information except for depth of field, shadow and light, and everyone's fight with gravity. You know, a child has a story, has a very short story of gravity and a lot of promise. An older person has the whole story told and maybe not a whole lot of more lines left, you know? Mm. And so these are the things you have to keep in mind. And a portrait doesn't start with someone's face. It's like, how are their feet planted in the ground? Are they standing on their feet? Are they sitting down? Are they leaning back? Are they, you know, leaning into you? Are they looking back at you? Is a part of them looking through you, you know? And so I think a portrait starts with your feet. It's like, how are you fighting gravity with every part of your body? Because that's life. Your life is about fighting gravity every day, and every part of your body does that.
I think sometimes Shannon's photography does the same thing.
Oh, we cross-influence each other all the time. Yeah.
You know, because Shannon, you're a fine art and a commercial artist.
Yes, yes. I do both. And I enjoy both a lot. My commercial ventures are really fun because I get to work in a community of people that are, you know, enjoy their jobs, or at least I assume they do. and it's fun. It's like a movable feast. You know, we do a lot of travel. We'll be staying in hotels. You figure out your shots all day. So there's a lot of problem solving. And
because commercial work, you're working as a team.
Yes, yes, yeah. Very much so. And then at night, you know, go out and have a meal. And so it's like a movable feast. And you know, when you're working with people long enough, they've become friends. And so I really love that aspect of it, and having a community around. And then as an artist, you know, I still am working with people. Well, I'm not working with people. I'm working with farm animals mostly lately.
You're going to be the next exhibition at the Art Salon.
Yes, in March. We have to figure out our date. But I also have to finish the show because amongst the photographs of farm animals, which, you know, most of them are quite large, you know, 30 by 46 around there. We also
the animals or the photography?
The
yeah, photographs. They're all coming.
yeah. We also want to include a part where I talk to the farmers and maybe they have something to say about the particular animal or the way they've do their farming, especially their, particularly when they're smaller farms. And I think the idea of doing that started when I took a photograph at Hawthorne Valley of a pigtail or a pig butt, actually. It was the whole thing was there. And I posted it, and then Hawthorne Valley saw it, and they wrote a beautiful piece about keeping the tail on and why they choose to keep the tails on the pigs instead of lopping them off like they might do in a factory farm, or as they do in a factory farm.
Why they get into the way? I mean, why would they remove them?
You know, it's. I think they
too much pig.
I think pigs, you know, in closed quarters might chew on each other's tails and infect each other. But it was an interesting thing to learn just about raising pigs.
I just learned something.
I thought it would be nice to include, pieces like
exactly
this in
these
the show.
Stories. That
and to engage with the local farmers here in a way. And bring it to the viewer.
Yeah. And we also like to explore subjects matters together. We recently actually took pictures and worked together with a woman who's legally blind. And she's actually a natural born freak. And she works at the Freak Show in Coney Island. And she's an incredible advocate as well, you know. And she opened my eyes to things that, you know, how accessible is the world to a legally blind person? It's not. And for her, a person from Australia who made it all the way to New York as a legally blind person who has only partial vision in one of her eyes, what an amazing story.
Not only that, she does aerial things for the shows, which I think is quite extraordinary for a legally blind person as well.
And as a legally blind, she's also, you know, a natural born freak, so she's a very visible person. Mm. So it's kind of the opposite. You see her a lot. She's very visible, and she's aware of that. But at the same time, the world is not as accessible to her, and that's kind of, you know, we're trying to see, like, how can we turn that into something really interesting.
Mm. And she her stage name's Cuckoo the Bird Girl.
Yeah.
Who's based on an ex-Cuckoo the Bird Girl who's performing in the 20s, 30s, and 40s.
Yeah.
And it was in the movie Freaks, actually.
Mm. Yeah. Amazing person. She's really...
Sarah
Hubolt is her name.
Sarah Hubolt.
Mm. Wow, it's just... I keep seeing flashcards, which, you know, it's almost what you do on Instagram.
Yeah.
Where you put an image up and attach a little story, and then it goes out into the world. Mm. But, you know, a lot of us like art books, but is Instagram kind of stealing away from that potential published work? Are we getting electronic?
I don't know. I think there's still, well, I think that I'd love to have some books. In fact, I would like to start printing books.
Yeah, we've
books.
Been talking about
And it's I think printing still, books. I still love the feeling of newspapers. And it's really funny because I was on 23rd Street recently trying to find a place to eat. And I thought, oh, let me get a newspaper before I sit down. It's hard to find a newspaper.
Really?
Oh, my. I walked like three blocks or more just trying to find newspapers.
Wow.
On 23rd Street. They used to be everywhere. But I still love the tactile feeling of books. I think for photography and for art, it's still a great way to see art and photography. Because I do think, you know, Instagram on a phone, it's quite small.
Yeah.
It doesn't work for everything.
And I mean, you know, you can lament about these things, or you can see, like, how can I be part of this narrative? You know, and how can I elevate the conversation to something interesting? To something worth discussing and worth talking about, rather than, you know, maybe just spewing out stuff that you're angry about, or just saying, oh, it's pretty, oh, I'm happy, it's pretty, oh, I'm happy. Mm. You know, somewhere in between those two, you can find a really meaningful discussion, I believe.
Yeah, I would say certainly Shannon and I, we can make reproductions. That's all we can do, reproductions of our photography. But Charlotta, you create a one of a kind in your artwork.
Yeah, and sisters and brothers, as you say. You know, and I do like also doing, we spoke about doing print series, and also like talking about the now, I also do family portraits, and I love it. I know a lot of people go like, oh, portraits, commissions. I love them. And I get a lot of freedom, though, from my subject matters. And it's been fun to explore the family portrait again, that has been for a long time not so much, you know, in the foreground, or people even saying, you know, somebody saying, you know, do I really deserve a family portrait? I'm like, of course you do.
And you're painting the family portraits.
Yes, yes.
Painting and collage.
I paint and collage it. And, you know, for instance, I was doing something for a, it was a, from an old picture from 1953, I think. And this picture was taken in Jamaica of a whole family. It was an anniversary, and it was beautiful. Everyone had correct character. And this guy was a musician. And so we put in things like, you know, his grandfather's favorite psalm in church. We were able to collage that in. And then, you know, shows that his mother was in. And then I said, you know, what was the date? And I found the Kingston Gleaner, the local newspaper. And just threw in, you know, banal stuff around the framework that happened that day, that was spoken of that day, that was taking place that day that this picture was taken. And it really, it just really complemented each other in a strong way. You know, you could say, oh, you know, Nat King Cole was playing in the only air-conditioned concert hall in Kingston, Jamaica when this picture was taken. So there's a context, you know, there's a it resonates, the moment resonates, and that's when you slow down. Because, you know, you can look at a picture more often. You know, you can look at it again and again. And that's what I want to create with painting it, rusting it, collaging it.
It kind of reminds me of the photo albums from the late 19th century going into probably only the first half of the 20th century, where you had an album usually with black pages and then family members, and then often there would be comments in white ink. And
yeah, my grandmother loved doing those.
Yeah,
I still remember her handwriting. I loved her handwriting.
We don't have those really anymore. That kind of imagery, and along with storytelling, you know, the scrapbook kind of creation.
Well, that's the thing I think is remarkable about the commissions, is it is amazing storytelling.
Mm.
Yeah.
That she's able to do. So it's not, you know, I mean, photography can be storytelling as well, but I think that her paintings bring in so much about the song of the family and the family life and of that particular family.
And what you know, with a collaging or with a family portrait, was devastating was if you did collage into it and someone didn't like it. You know, that was the thing, that was a problem. So what I was able to do with that is I make a bunch of prints, and that's how I got into making prints of artwork and realizing, oh, wow, these are originals as well, because they were helping me with a process to get to the other side and to get what the person really wanted, you know, what they wanted from this picture, you know, because it could go all kinds of ways. There's so many possibilities.
Yeah, I speaking for myself, being a portrait photographer, there would always, I like the human study of the face, and often they're not smiling. So a lot of the outside comments were, what's wrong? Were you sad? You know, why aren't you smiling? And, you know, well, that was not my intent, and I was working with the subject, and we were fine with that. And
I think we're moving a little bit away from that necessity.
Mm.
You know, I realize that that's not always necessary anymore.
Yeah.
But we had that thing of like, just smile for the picture. You know, it's like, and all you have is Kodak moments.
Yeah, yeah. Every picture is a smile. It's so funny because in the history of photography, nobody could smile because the exposure was so long. And then all of a sudden, you know, with the advent at a certain point when it popularized four families, you know, Kodak made cameras that everybody could use, then everybody was smiling. And it is true. People will be, you know, automatically go for that smile. And sometimes it's nice not to have that.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Mm. Actually, last year I did a show called We Didn't Come Here to Be Pretty. And it was portraits of women in situations in different, you know, stages of like not being very happy, you know, and they were beautiful that way. They really were strong. And I realized, you know, we've been waiting for this moment for a long time. We didn't come here to be pretty. You know, we came here to be strong.
Yeah.
You know, to be ourselves.
It's the selfie that's promoted the smiles, I think. Just because you're happy. You're, you know, with usually a lot of people, if you can, you know, you're having a good time.
Yeah.
Even if you're not. You gotta show the world.
Yeah.
So we, you know, the Americana show that's up now.
Yeah.
Will that continue until Shannon's ready to?
Yeah. Exactly.
Be there.
And we're thinking of landscapes. We're also thinking of sports shows. You know, I love doing pictures out of sports, and Shannon's thinking of
athletes.
Of athletes, sorry. Of athletes and teams, you know.
And you were also talking about performance art as being part of the gallery.
Yes, and readings and poetry, and that's where we're trying to find out what this space is asking us to do.
It has multiple purposes. I mean, it's even, you know, on certain days of the week, it's a jiu-jitsu gym. I have mats. I invite people over on the days that they're Atlas Jiu-Jitsu in Hudson is closed.
It's our art garage.
And so it has many, many uses. And we look to you know, engage the community with multiple uses.
Yeah.
How often is the gallery open right now?
It's open generally every weekend. Yeah.
So right now it's open Saturday and Sunday from 12 to 6.
Yes.
In the summer, we'll probably add Friday.
Yeah.
That's great. Because both of you do work, and, you know, you can't be multiple, you know, two places at once.
Well, also, I mean, she
We're working on it. She
has to paint, and I have to be out, able to go out and take photographs sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's really funny about having the gallery is all of a sudden, and not that we had weekends off anyway, because we were always renovating or doing something, but now we definitely don't have weekends off anymore.
No. And, I mean, what's also great is you really learn what an audience sees in your work, which is such an amazing understanding. You get feedback. You know, you get people are angry, people are excited, people who don't get it. People are like, what are you doing here? And people are like, wow, I really needed to see this. Mm. You know, so it's what's great for an artist is to have this incredible amount of feedback.
Listeners, you're listening just now to Charlotta Jansen and her compatriot, Shannon Greer. We're on WGXC 90.7 FM. This is the Art of the Hudson Valley, and we're definitely covering the Hudson Valley from New York City area up here to Hudson and Columbia and Greene County. And, you know, we have about 15 or so more minutes, so let's continue the conversation because there's so much to talk about.
Yeah.
And Charlotta, you also do murals, don't you?
Yes. Yep. Yes, I love doing murals, and I love doing a mural with the school with Kite's Nest.
Mm.
And it's kind of funny because they were saying, like, where are you located? I'm like, right down the street from you. But they kind of were, they wanted to do something political, and that's how they came to me. And
do you involve the children?
And it's funny, they had no idea that Charlotta lived in Hudson.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, it's wonderful. I mean, and these kids are good learners. And you'll be amazed if you just, you know, you have to... Often, you know, the kids learn to paint with very opaque colors. You know, it's... And for me, it's about, you know, out about, like, glazing, and it's very runny. So basically, they have to do teamwork. They have to, like, there has to be someone, you know, whole, you know, moving with a brush, and the others are like catching the drip so that it's not too saucy, you know. And it's really interesting to get them to do teamwork and how they work things out, you know. My favorite was this little girl who just could never get her time on the ladder, so she kept jumping up, and she and she was an excellent painter. She was amazing.
And an amazing jumper.
Yeah. And an amazing jumper.
What I was hoping, and this could still happen, when they did the mural, and it's on the Boys Club right off of 3rd and on
Youth
Cherry
Club.
Alley.
Youth Club. Now.
Youth Club. Youth Club. Sorry. Youth Club. Yes, you're right.
I know. Now it's the Scouts.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was hoping that Cherry Alley, that other people would start doing murals on Cherry Alley too, because it'd be great if we had an alley just filled with murals.
I'd love that. Yeah. And also, for instance, the Boys Club's evolution is an incredible story. Mm. You know, how it went from just white boys to multicultural boys to boys and girls, you know? And so that's a story in and of itself. You know?
And I guess, and if it's a youth club, then it encompasses everybody.
Well, let me ask you from your own experiences. I don't know what the answer could be, but from your experience, do you think children are lacking that at-home and in-school art interaction and learning to express themselves through art?
I mean, I think that some parents and even some school counselors don't necessarily nurture artists.
Mm.
I had friends that I went to with SUNY Purchase where the counselor actually, school counselors would try to get them not to do art.
Hmm.
Especially African-American men. They wanted them to do, push them towards something that was, I guess, more stable. But they,
sports?
You know,
or?
No, not okay. at all. But, you know, to go to college for other things. But now one of them is an amazing filmmaker, and he's worked in the past with Spike Lee, and now he's directing films on his own. So, you know, I think that, and that's with everybody. I mean, you know, I'm sure tons of families would prefer their kids to be lawyers and doctors. And so it just depends on how much, you know, you're fighting, how much the art is in you.
And it's not easy. I mean, as much as you might be a great painter or great artist, doesn't mean you're going to have great success. And that might not, you might not need that. You know, who knows? Because, you know, that's a very personal thing. Like, we think we can resolve these things with statistics when all we have to really do is allow an individual to be part of a society and themselves.
That, you know, being an artist doesn't have to be the end result of learning art, because doing art is expressing yourself and finding your creative self, because that can lead into how you are as a politician, a lawyer, a teacher, factory worker, you know, that being able to use your mind to come up with other solutions. That's sort of what the American way was.
Yeah.
That I think we've lost our way with that.
Well, particularly when the first things that get cut in schools when they're started having a hard time getting funded are arts programs, music programs, anything to do with the arts. And it's really unfortunate. And whether it's by design or, you know, because he's lefty artists or not, I don't
Socialists.
Know. Socialists. Yeah. Yes. Oh, my God.
One of my favorite words. I mean, Charlotta, you had that experience of community when you were doing those murals.
Oh, yeah. And I love those experiences. I think you can always experience community. Slow down and you'll experience community. Mm. Slow down and talk to someone. You'll experience community. Like, I think that's what I really did it for. Like, I realized I had all kinds of other stressful situations going on with a restaurant and things that I had to take care of. And I could have, like, narrated away and said, you know what, I can't do this right now, you know. But they said, hey, we need this, we want this. And I said, you know what, I need to do this for me. I need to do this and remind myself of how much I love doing this and how much I love doing it with kids, too. They were so inspiring.
Because with art, it's okay to make mistakes.
There are no mistakes.
Yeah.
It's okay to mess things up, you know, because if you don't like it, you paint it over, you know, and it's just a few brush strokes. And I even like when things like kind of come bleed through from something that you might call a mistake, but just like maybe an incongruence, and it kind of adds to what you painted in the end, you know, the last strokes that you bold strokes you put on. And you know, we often get too concentrated on the things that we think are the most important thing, but they are really, they have to almost be like a, they have to be something light and almost whimsical. Like, I do think that I am whimsical. But I think my content can be very, like, sometimes really...
I'm whimsical.
Yeah, but, yeah, you are, definitely. You go about everything whimsically. It drives me crazy. You're like, you're too whimsical. That's good, serious.
Well, that what makes the two of you such a perfect, you know, duo, because you can see that conflict in a lot of your social media and the images of yourselves and the conversations.
Yeah.
And, I think the conflict, a great source of the conflict is the laugh lines I've given her.
Yes. Where we were once like upset at each other, or I was upset at him. He's like, come into the studio. And I'm like, what do you want now? I'm really upset at you right now. And he just like said, like, stand at this wall. And he stands there next to me, takes a picture, or has his assistant take a picture. And he's like, Charlotta really pissed off at me. I'm like, yeah, I was really pissed off at you. And then I love the comments below. She had her reasons to be really pissed off at you.
Well, it's because, you know, both of you are storytellers.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Charlotta, I like, you know, when you were just talking about the messing up and your paintings with the, you know, adding collage, and you're adding multiple levels of storyline, and it gets a little messy, but that's okay, because the message is still going to come through.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, especially with like the collage, I want, you know, I get really like brash shapes onto the canvas, but I like that they kind of become discreet because they don't interrupt the conversation. Because it's still you still stick to the subject, and it's thought about.
And she doesn't understand my photographs because she wants to collage them.
I
Where's the story in those photographs? I don't see the story.
Well, Shannon, you were collaging when you were putting little comments over.
Yeah.
Yes.
Charlotta.
I love those comments, and I really like his stories that way. And also, you know, talking about material or what material we have at our... I think... you know what makes it really great is when you just work with the material you have, you know? And one thing that I always have to tell myself, like I anyone who says, oh, I don't have the right material, I say, go to the MoMA, go to Jacob Lawrence's wall. He's one of my favorite, most underrated artists because he, if you look at this artwork, it is so precious. The story is so powerful, the migration series. And you look at it and you see, boy, this guy had shitty brushes, shitty paper. The paint doesn't cover very well. And the artwork is exquisite. You know, just remind yourself of that. You don't have to have the most exquisite materials to make the most amazing work.
I think the same thing with cameras. I mean, people get so absorbed about, oh, what, you know, I'm not going to take this picture until I have this camera or I need this sort of equipment. But really, it's the eye behind the camera that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be great to have the most expensive, wonderful camera, but it's unnecessary because people can take great photographs with a Quaker Oats box.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm quite jealous with the camera that you have in front of you, Shannon. But I totally agree. I have a friend of mine, photographer Holly Northrup, and she likes salvaging cameras from multiple eras, and whether they have light leaks or not, she doesn't care because she's still going to photograph and it's still going to be a story, and she doesn't care if there's a flare or, you know, a darkened area because the camera has an imperfected lens
she
element.
She probably loves that about it.
Oh, yeah, that's...
Yeah, if it doesn't have that, that's the horror. No light leak.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I hate light leaks myself, but I love...
Busted.
Grain. I love grain.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, it's perfect, yeah. I think, you know, and talking about that, you know,
I
what's perfect,
too.
You know, is it without grain? Is it with grain? Is it in focus? Is it out of focus? Well, it's all perfect, you know, if you've created it and you know, you're willing to put it out there.
Yeah.
Well, it's amazing. Cause I've totally adapted to going away from film to digital. And I'm super happy because the happiness is just the immediacy, I suppose. I love being able to take a whole bunch of pictures and photographs and download them and have them out immediately to see them. And it just brings me, an ADHD person, that, you know, so much pleasure.
Very.
I couldn't be more thrilled.
Yeah.
It was certainly for, let's say, a war correspondent, or my father was a travel photographer and did film, and he'd be away for 6 weeks taking, you know, hundreds of rolls of film, and he didn't know what he had until he got home, and, you know, to see what those images were.
Yeah.
And even a war photographer, you know, what if you had used the same roll of film accidentally two or three times, and you came home with zip? But the, you know, the instantaneous digital is a joy.
Gratification. Oh. It's just crazy. Yeah.
It's like crack for me.
Eye crack.
The, I've, it took me a while, but it's so funny because with the way digital went, it was C41 a lot. I was shooting slides mostly, actually, slides and then C41 and then, seemed like it was maybe, you know, for film it was 90-95% 5% digital, and it seemed like overnight it was 100% digital.
Wow.
It happened so fast.
Yeah, I think we're experiencing more and more frequent disruptions, you know, of you know, things that were used to being one way, and then all at once they're another way. Like you spoke about the newspapers, like you speak about, like, social media, how it's influenced our lives and our visual world. And us as visual artists are the story we tell, you know? So there's upsides and downsides to that.
I suppose the next thing show we should do should be like an Instagram show where nothing's bigger than an inch and a half wide and everything's square.
No, I like painting big. Not gonna happen. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Photography, we like large prints, don't we, Shannon?
Oh, yes. If I could make them.
Charlotta, don't give us, you know, take it away from us. We like big too.
I like bigger.
But I, you know, I also used to like Polaroids.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was like the first digital kind of thing.
Immediate.
First visual crack.
After a couple minutes, you could actually see an image get created, and there it was.
Yeah.
I want